It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I so appreciate each and every one of you listening. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Each of you are treasured, you're valued, and you have a purpose. So we've got a lot to do here. We've got a country that seems to me that there are those from without and within that are trying to destroy this country. And that is why we need to understand what's going on and engage in conversations with our friends and our family, our neighbors and our colleagues. And of course, we need to do our civic duty as well. And that's vote, step up to run for office. We've got a lot to do right now. So thank you to this team I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And it is hump day, producer Steve. I can't believe it's Wednesday. It seemed like it was just Monday just a moment ago.
Yeah, much to my surprise, that lazy camel didn't get here this morning to remind us that it is hump day. But back to what you were just saying, I don't know that you originated, but you adopted it, the phrase, we've got a country to save, yes?
Yeah, we do. We really do. And I keep going back, and I need to really look that Thomas Paine quote up again that we did a week or so ago, but it actually gave me some comfort. Let me see if I can find it while we're here. And it was along the line of, because I've been so concerned about what we are passing on to this next generation. I mean, one of the big things is the headline here about the debt ceiling. My gosh, and, you know, we've had generations before who they spent blood and treasure to pass on liberty, which is the responsible exercise of freedom, to the next generation. And here we are looking giving the next generation a big fat IOU that they had nothing to do with and nothing to say in incurring this debt. And yet we think we're going to pass that on. There's something really, really immoral about that from one generation to another.
Well, I've been, I kind of jumped on it yesterday when it first surfaced, or you could see it coming. It's almost like it's so predictable. Both parties are equally guilty, and this has been going on since my little brief research here, since 1930-something, and I just don't get it. You and I can't do it as individuals. Corporations can't do it, as far as I know, but the government can.
But you know what, Steve? We are complicit in this, and that is, do you know of anybody? And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but anybody that received free money over this last, pandemic thing, that anybody said, no, I'm not going to take it. And, it's just human nature. When something is presented like that, people take it. And those in government know that. They also know that they're buying votes. You talk about this all the time, free money buying votes. And so we as a society have to say, wait a minute, this is not who we are to pass on this big fat IOU to the next generations. And of course, the Dems want to increase the debt ceiling. And so at some point in time, it may not be popular, but it's the right thing to do for these politicians to say no.
Well, and the big stick they put over, they're really good at this, and we got a taste of it during Bill Clinton's years of shutting down the government. Well, if we don't do this, we're going to shut down the government. And I'm also to the point, I want to dare them and say, go ahead. And
I think,
we had some responsible journalism in the country, which, that's gone, then some of the facts would start to come out. Not necessarily who's at fault, but how is this happening? What have been the mechanics over the, what I was just looking at a chart of the last 50 years, since 1970, and looking at the debt ceilings is going up, up, up. It's like, get the facts out there and let the public decide. Sure, you can make them mad by shutting down the government, but give them some information that they can really get their teeth into.
But Steve, if we don't at some point in time shut down the government and get a handle on this, it will get shut down and we're not going to like the way it's going to look.
Well, no,
because
it's bad medicine. There's no doubt about it. But why do you take medicine?
True. So, hey, I found this quote, and it's Thomas Paine. And he said this. He said, "I prefer peace, but if trouble must come, let it come in my time so that my children can live in peace." So as we look at all that's happening out there in the landscape and so concerned about that, but I realize I am grateful that it is happening now in my lifetime so that what we do, we can step into this, step into addressing this trouble, hopefully get this thing turned around so that we are passing something very good on to the next generation, Steve.
You put that Thomas Paine quote up against the, what was it, Lenin, about how do you make the middle class miserable? I mean, those are powerful quotes.
Right. And Lenin said, a Soviet dictator, how to crush the middle class. And that is why people come to America, Steve, or it used to be. Not now what we look at down at the southern border, because now there's all this free stuff. And it's not free stuff. We know that. Look at this. The debt, the debt has to be increased. But people throughout history have come to America for opportunity. And that opportunity has created this big middle class. And, of course, we see government policies all the way from local up to national through this reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus. We have seen what has happened then with shutting down businesses. It's been an assault on the middle class, for sure. But people would come here because you could open up a restaurant. You could be an entrepreneur. And Lenin said the way to crush the middle class is through taxation and inflation. So, my friends, when we go to the ballot box this November, there's going to be a number of spending questions there, tax increases. And I pretty well would blanket say no to all of them. And most all of these questions also detaper the excess revenue. So if you look at the very end of those ballot questions, and if it has something, I think it's the Article 10, the Roman numeral 10, that means that they are referring to Tabor, which is Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights. That means they're going to try to get around it. And just on that alone, I think that's disingenuous. Say no on that. And it took me a while to figure that out. I think I finally figured it out on a Parks and Recreation taxing question. So that's just a little FYI. But again, Thomas Paine said, "I prefer peace, but if trouble must come, let it come in my time so that my children can live in peace." And so we have a lot to be grateful for because we have these challenges right now and we are here to address them. So with that, let's go ahead. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent podcast. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And I really appreciate all of you who support us as well. So today is Wednesday. So it is Wings Day at Hooters Restaurants. And this is for dine in and to go. And if you buy 20 wings, you get 10 wings for free. And I've got the girls coming over tonight. So I'm going to have some Hooters wings tonight, I think, Steve. And I will take advantage of that. And they also have specials on burgers, and they're $10. They have all kinds of different burgers, and that's all the time. So be sure and check out my website and click on the sponsors tab. I recommend all of them. And if you click on the Hooters tab, you'll get all of their upcoming or all of their specials and what's going on there. So be sure and check that out. We've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to be talking with Casper Stockham in just a minute. And he has stepped up to the plate. The radical activist left, they have a candidate training program for women where they train women to run for office and win. And they have been very successful. The problem is most all of these candidates are adhering to a Marxist ideology. And we're seeing policies as they get into office, like Senator Faith Winter, or you see Candy C. DeBaca, who's on Denver City Council, that they are pushing socialist agenda through public policy. And so Casper Stockham realized this, realized that we have so many good people that, and I see this, stepping forward to run for school board. We see, and there's a lot of school board elections right now. And stepping up, but they're not trained, and it's almost like stepping into a meat grinder. Good people wanting to do the right thing, but they're not trained and don't have an infrastructure to do that. So Casper Stockham said, "I'm going to address that," and he, with some other colleagues, created America First Republicans. Casper Stockham, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim, it's good to be with you.
This candidate training program. When did you start this program, Casper?
We started, we opened the doors on January 16th, excuse me, this year. So it's been about 8 or 9 months, and it's been going pretty good. You know, we've trained about 50 candidates so far. Some of those folks go on to actually start a campaign. Others go on to volunteer for campaigns. But to your point about Emerge, you know, the Democrat version of what we're doing, they've been at it for many, many years, 10, 15 years. And candidates that come out of their training must abide by socialist practices and things like that. We are training candidates on something very, very unique, the Constitution and the Republican Party platform. So, you know, we're not requiring them to do that, but we train them on it. And we would like for them to adhere to that because a lot of the candidates, a lot of the politicians today don't. And I'm talking about Republican politicians.
Right, I know, on both sides of the aisle. That's why that brings up this initiative that is going to be on the ballot this November, and it's called LEAP. And hopefully I get this right, Learning Enrichment and Achievement Progress Plan, I think is what that is. It's Prop 119.
Yeah.
And they've been out there. They've not been honest in how they are portraying this to different groups out there that they are getting to endorse this. In fact, I met with somebody yesterday who's part of a group that just endorsed this. And he said, this is not how this was presented to us. And they're saying, oh, this is this will help a new marijuana tax. For the children, it'll help disadvantaged children with after-school programs, get them caught up on reading, writing, and arithmetic. And it's a tax over here on marijuana, so it's not really going to affect very many people. And so that's how they're getting getting people to support it. But what it is antithetical to representative government because how it is governed is by an unelected, unaccountable. Yeah. Authority board of 9 members. This governor chooses them. They choose their replacements. They have taxing powers. They're not accountable to anybody. And this is something that we need to help people understand that this is how Colorado has been moving further and further and further to the Marxist left is these kinds of things. So what you're doing, Casper, is really important.
Yeah, that LEAP initiative is a recipe for disaster. You know, it sounds all warm and fuzzy because it's not taxing us directly, supposedly, but it has all the earmarks for something that's going to turn into an absolute disaster. Just like, you know, when they start turning taxes into fees and stuff, and over time, you know, Tabor was strong in years past, but they've had so many fees going on now. Tabor only covers about 40% of the budget because they turn everything else into fees.
And it's And Tabor is Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, and it's an amendment to the Constitution. And to your point, Casper, it's been both Democrats and Republicans that have chipped away at it. And so this training program that you're doing is very, very important to give people a foundation. I know that one of your candidates, Eric Odlin, is running for U.S. Senate. And I know that you, as you mentioned, you've trained over 50 people. You've got a class coming up now, right?
Yes, this coming Saturday. It's still time to sign up for the class. It runs for 9 weeks on a Saturday from 10 to noon. You can take it in person. We still have room for in-person students, and or you can take it online. So even if you can't make it on a Saturday, you can just go to your computer and still listen in on the, or not just listen in, but you can participate because it's on Zoom.
Okay, so, and how much is it?
It's $180 for the 9 weeks, which is, you know, just an incredible bargain.
Yeah.
There are classes like this that charge thousands of dollars to do what we're doing. So it's definitely worth the money. And again, even if you're not going to be a candidate, and you'll know, because this class takes someone from not knowing anything about politics to becoming a candidate. At the end of it, you actually are a candidate, if not a real candidate, but a virtual candidate. So you'll know if you really want to go through that process or not. But you also know.
I was going to say, you also know if you want to help a candidate. So, Casper, right. We're running up against time here. How can people get more information?
Yes, they can go to AmericaFirstRepublicans.us and click on the training tab. That's AmericaFirstRepublicans, just FRIST, Republicans.us.
Okay, AmericaFirstRepublicans.us. Casper Stockham, thanks so much. And this is one of the battles that we really need to be engaged in. So thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with former state senator Kevin Lundberg. He is with the Colorado Republican Study Committee, and find out what happened last week at this big meeting of the Central Committee of the Republicans and where we're going from there. So we'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. I so, so appreciate that. On the line with me is Kevin Lundberg. He's a former state senator, and he is the executive director of the, I don't have it right at my fingertips, and I used to have it memorized. What's the exact title, Kevin?
It's the Republican Study Committee of Colorado.
Okay. And last week, Kevin, was the big meeting, I guess it was down in Pueblo, of the Central right. Committee for the Republican Party. And it was pretty important. There were two questions there. And I really feel that the one question put in place something that was very important, and that was regarding these open primaries. But the real thing, the real goal on this was to get to a point where we could challenge the constitutionality of Prop 108, which was the open primary initiative that was passed back in 2016. So tell us what happened.
Well, yeah, the open primary means that all unaffiliated voters are sent a ballot for both the Republicans and the Democrats, and then they have a choice of voting for either ballot, not both, but one or the other. And just a little bit of review here. That means that for the Republicans, because there's such a large number of unaffiliated voters, there are more ballots sent out to non-Republicans than Republicans. And that's really the case on the Democrat side, too. So anyway, the Republican
Think
Party,
about the expense of that. Just think how expensive that is.
That's a good point, because if you're a candidate, you know, I was listening to what Casper was saying about preparing people to be a candidate. Well, here in Colorado, the first election you stand for many seats for state legislature and other areas like that is the primary. And the irony is that since since you're not just running among other or running to be voted on by Republicans, but unaffiliated as well, your voter potential voter pool is more than twice as large than what people expect it to be. Now, as you mentioned, this happened in 2016. That's when this initiative was voted on, and it passed just barely, meaning, I don't know, 53-54%. It wasn't an overwhelming majority of people that voted for it, but a majority did, and so it became a part of the Colorado law. And you know, you mentioned that it greatly increased the cost of running for office, with kind of a weird twist to it, because, you know, it used to be that if you were a Republican, you ran for nomination to the general election against other Republicans, which was voted on by Republicans. But now, in the last two election cycles, it's been a very different mix. And this really kind of upsets the apple cart as far as how people are elected to stand for election in a general election by, you know, somebody other than the Republicans pick them. So anyway, that was called Prop 108. And there was a provision in it that said, well, the party could opt out if they could generate 75% of the total membership of the state Senate committee to vote against it, and then it would only be good for the next election cycle. Well, that's a ridiculously high standard that has never been met, and that was voted on Saturday, and that failed. And I think it failed for a couple of reasons. One, such a high standard, but number two, people realized that really wasn't a viable option, because if the party had opted out, and that's what they called it, the opt-out, then there would be no primary at all, and the party would be forced to pick their nominees through a convention or assembly, thus cutting out all Republicans to be able to vote on a primary as well. So there's another option, and this is not Prop 108 really doesn't meet constitutional standards. And that was proven by the United States Supreme Court when they knocked down a similar law in California way back in 2000. When they put Prop 108 together, they said, we'll put in this opt-out provision, but it's not legal. And so the other option is, let's challenge the whole legality of Proposition 108 in the federal courts. That's what passed by a unanimous vote.
Wow.
Last Saturday. So the Republicans voted to challenge it. Now, that doesn't mean it automatically goes away. That means that now you have to prove it up in the courts. So the next step is the party and interested individuals need to step up and pay for the lawsuit, which will be an expensive proposition, but much less expensive than what individual candidates have to go through. I mean, if you bundle it all up, I'm certain millions of dollars are spent every year for Republicans running in the primary, but having to run their campaign and communicate to all of the unaffiliated voters as well. So anyway, the next task is to raise the money for the lawsuit, and it's in the hands of the party and individuals. And there was actually another resolution that was passed that said, and let's set up some sort of an organizational structure to create some fundraising for all of this. So I'm very grateful that, A, they said, let's tackle the real problem, which is the whole essentially open primary system. It's not totally open because Democrats can't vote for Republican primaries, as some states have put in place, and that's a whole other discussion we don't have time for. But basically, right, it doesn't meet constitutional standards for what we have here in Colorado. It needs to be challenged in federal court, And that is exactly what the State Central Committee voted to do unanimously. Now the job is to go out there and raise the funds to make it so, and to put a good team of lawyers who know what they're doing in federal courts and go after this. And I'm very encouraged that I see a lot of movement now on the part of the officials in the party to, let's get this done. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing happen.
Well, and it looked to me, because we had John Eastman on before the big meeting, and it seemed to me there was so much emotion around this opt-out question. But the real goal, and I think if they hadn't had the opt-out conversation, Kevin, we would never have gotten to this point of challenging the constitutionality of Prop 108.
That's an excellent point, because, of course, the opt-out is a huge part of the of why it's unconstitutional to force the Republican Party into this open primary situation. But, it got the conversation going, got people thinking, and you're quite right. It was a very emotional issue that there were, good people on both sides of that coin trying to say, well, we ought to do it. No, that's not the proper path. Let's not do that. And yet it pushed us to the point to realize something needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And the something that could have the best outcome is to challenge its constitutionality in the courts. And we're full steam ahead now.
And I just want to mention, I'm over here on Ballotpedia, and I've just been, the whole follow the money thing. And I couldn't quite figure out this whole opt-out thing. I was really, that's probably when I really started to pay attention. I can't remember if we did our voter's guide that year or not. We will be doing our voter's guide. But to support to support the open primary, 108, there was almost $5.3 million spent on that. And the opposition only had 71,000. But you're continuing to see a lot of the same names. And Kent Theory put in $2.3 million on that. And you continue to see him pop up on a number of these different initiatives, putting big money behind it. And these things, as you mentioned, this was unconstitutional. But the way they crafted it with that 75% vote that they needed, I think they were trying to get around the California one, was ruled unconstitutional. So I think that, it was really by design. So this is a congratulations, a unanimous to get two Republicans to agree on something is pretty amazing. So that this was unanimous is pretty remarkable. So Kevin, thank you so much for giving us an update on this. I think it's important, and hopefully this will get through the courts and we can get that taken care of, hopefully before the 2022 election. I know that's a tall order, but that would be great. Kevin Lundberg, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I certainly appreciate you kind of giving us a little space of time to just jump in and give you the highlights so people can know that we've got a good path ahead if we'll just pursue it with all diligence.
Oh, and one other thing. You had mentioned the lawsuit, and if people want to help on that lawsuit, I think you said we'd love to do it with $50 donations or less. What should they do? Do we know where to give that yet, is that a stay
not
tuned?
Not quite yet, because we've got to, you mentioned John Eastman. He is actually doing some research into this and, checking with the party on what is the proper path in light of Colorado campaign finance rules. So we want to make sure that we've got everything done properly. And so stay tuned. It won't be long, but we'll figure this out and we'll then make this available for people to respond to.
Perfect. Well, keep us in the loop, Kevin Lundberg.
Thank you. I'll do it.
Okay. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue on. We're going to talk about the electric grid. Stay tuned.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do that. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or the latest silent thief, which is government-induced inflation. And I blew right through. I know you all comment that you really appreciate the quotes. And we're going to be talking with Michael maybe here in just a moment. So, but we're talking about the electric grid. So I thought, who would be a great person to quote? And that is Thomas Edison. And he was an American inventor and businessman. He was described as America's greatest inventor. And he developed many devices and fields such as electric power generation, mass communication, sound recording, motion pictures. He was born in 1847. He died in 1931, and he said this. He said, "Our schools are not teaching students to think. It is astonishing how many young people have difficulty in putting their brains definitely and systematically to work." And producer Steve, you and I were talking about that in the pre-show conversation, and that was, he died in 1931, and now we look at education. So I guess each generation has the same challenges, producer Steve.
Let's just say he said those words in 1930. So how many years? What, 90 years since? Yeah. If he saw it then, what's it like today?
I know. So anyway, I thought that was very, very interesting. And again, that's Thomas Edison, and we're going to be talking about our electric grid. Really excited about my next guest, Michael Mabey. He's worked as an urban EMT and paramedic. He worked as a suburban cop for the federal government. He's had a lot of military training, 2 wartime deployments to Iraq, 2 humanitarian missions to Guatemala. He was decorated by both the Army and the federal government for his actions on 9/11 at the World Trade Center. But he has to say his favorite decoration was having one of his troops in Iraq say to his first sergeant after a convoy, I'm not sure if I that sergeant major is a major hard, and then fill in the blank since we're on the air. So he has a lot of experience on this, but he's written a book. And the book is, it is titled The Civil Defense Book. And he says he wrote this because he spent his entire adult life in the service of our country and our people. And he feels that protecting the country and our communities is still a worthy cause. So, Michael Mabey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, and your website is michaelmabey.info. But it's titled Grid Security Now. And I am learning that we're at tremendous risk here in America. Our way of life, certainly energy is what powers our lives. And we are at significant risk. So what's your thoughts on this, Michael?
Well, we have known for decades that the electric grid is vulnerable to a wide variety of threats. And, generally speaking, nowadays, people really take it for granted that they flip on the switch and the lights come on. But when you really take a look at what America's Achilles heel is, it's actually the electric grid. So the electric grid is the life support system that enables the 330 million people in the United States to survive. Everything that we need to survive as a country and as people is completely dependent on the electric grid. Food is dependent on the electric grid, water, emergency services, our medical services, communications. All of the critical infrastructures in the United States depend on this one thing, the electric grid. And for decades, the federal government has known that the electric grid is susceptible to a really wide variety of threats, including cyber attack, physical attack, attack by an electromagnetic pulse, an attack, or a solar weather, actually. So it doesn't even have to be an enemy trying to take us out. Mother Nature, with mathematical certainty, is going to throw a geomagnetic disturbance at us or a solar flare at some point. We just don't know exactly when, and our electric grid is completely susceptible to that. So despite the fact that the federal government and the industry has known for decades about all of these threats, relatively little has been done to protect the electric grid against any of them, believe it or not.
Well, and you have written a piece recently, How the Electric Utility Industry Torpedoed Grid Security. And we've got a couple of things on the headlines. And there has been a real assault on fossil fuels out here in Colorado. Colorado is a great energy producer, and we're seeing public policy. In fact, just a couple of things. This was reported by the Colorado Sun. The Colorado regulators moved forward with a controversial new law to slash greenhouse gas emissions. And it's the first of its type in the nation. Colorado is doing a lot of things first in the nation, which are not good for everyday hardworking people. But then in Colorado, they're also putting in, this is from the Colorado Sun, that Xcel Energy's new electric vehicle incentives are including used car rebates and a variety of things. So they're trying to push people into getting onto the electric grid. And, of course, everything is dependent, as you mentioned, on that. But this has been really a, and I've watched it, this has really been a public policy thing. I look at, like, Xcel Energy, and, hey, if you can go to the public policy makers, the politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, and get them to shut down your competition and then push people to your product, then, of course, that increases revenues. But the electric utility industry has really not done much for grid security. So you know more about that, but I'm just the bystander kind of watching all this.
Yeah, so now, you know, the first thing that I would say is that the security of the electric grid is not a partisan issue. Everybody needs to be concerned about this. And I would, you know, point out that, you know, both Democrats and Republicans, or both conservatives and liberals, are going to die at about the same rate when the grid goes down. So, you know, one thing that I think we have to be very careful about is, you know, this isn't a partisan issue. Now, we've got a lot of people out there who are advocating for green energy, and we've got a lot of people out there who are advocating, you know, that fossil fuels are more reliable. Just to give you one example of why, you know, this is a separate debate, you know, about how we want to power our grid for the future. All of these things, whether it's, you know, green energy, you know, solar, hydro, you know, wind, or whether it's, you know, more, you know, kind of conventional energy types like, you know, coal and oil and natural gas, all of them are susceptible to the same threats, and we have to remember that. So what we really need to do is address the threats, and I think how we power our future grid is a completely valid but really separate argument, and that seems to be where some of the partisan politics comes in. And a really good example of this was the Texas blackout in February, which I happened to live through. I live in Texas, and so I was right in the middle of it when this happened. So as soon as, you know, the lights hadn't even come back on and the finger pointing had already started. And, you know, there were a lot of people that were blaming the green energy, you know, the solar and the wind. But the fact of the matter is every generation type in Texas failed. So the problem wasn't, you know, solar, wind, coal, oil, nuclear. It was all of them. All energy types failed, all generation types failed during that blackout. And really the root cause of the problem was the lack of addressing winterization of the facilities. And the really horrible thing about the Texas blackout, so we had, as of now, the state of Texas reports there were 210 deaths related to that outage. And most of these deaths were related to hypothermia or exposure and carbon monoxide poisoning. So they were directly attributable to the loss of the electric grid. And despite the fact that this horrible thing happened, it wasn't the first time. In Texas, the exact same thing happened in 2011. And then prior to that, the exact same thing happened in 1989. We had blackouts caused by extreme weather. And after the 89 blackout, you know, there were hearings and reports, and they didn't fix it. And then it happened again in 2011, and there's hearings and reports, and they didn't fix it. Now, 2021 happened. There were, I believe, 26 bills introduced in the Texas legislature, including one bill that actually would have protected the grid in Texas. That bill didn't pass, and the few bills that did pass are not going to mandate that this problem get fixed. And that is part of the problem. The industry lobbies very, very heavily, both at the federal and at the state level, to keep regulation at bay. And just to give you an example of this, in the last 10 years, the electric utility industry has spent $1.2 billion lobbying the federal government, just the federal government alone, not counting what they spent at the states, and has spent over $150 million in political contributions to members of the federal Congress. So when you think about the amount of money that the electric utility industry is paying to fight regulation, you know, one has to wonder, well, wouldn't this money be put to better use to harden the electric grid, you know, to make us all safer? The other real irony about all this money that the electric utility industry spends lobbying our legislators and, you know, providing these very, very generous contributions to them is that this money all comes from our electric bills. So the American people are funding a campaign to thwart regulation of the electric grid. Now, we should probably kind of talk about this in context because, you know, I'm making the electric utility industry sound very evil. But, you know, in America, it is legal for them to do what they're doing. It is legal for, you know, special interest groups to lobby Congress and to give political donations. So that's kind of the landscape that we're in. And also most industries tend, and you know, you can imagine why. I mean, you know, for people who are business owners, most industries tend to be against government regulation. And you know, I think that's fine. There's a balance, you know, that we have to achieve. And part of the problem we have now is we're not achieving that balance in our electric grid. So let's back up and let's talk about what the electric grid is, because that's really important for people to understand. So the electric grid isn't just one thing, and it's not owned or controlled by one company or one entity. The electric grid is actually around 3,000 different companies, both public and private sector company, that are involved in the generation, transmission, and distribution of electric power. So this is 3,000 different barn doors we have to guard, and some of them are local municipal governments, some of them are federal governments, some of them are state governments, and a lot of them are private sector companies. And it's the biggest machine. The electric grid is the biggest machine in the history of the world. It's been built piece by piece. You were just talking about Thomas Edison. Arguably, he started it in the late 1800s in New York City, with the Pearl Street substation, which initially just powered a couple of hundred lamps and, you know, a couple of buildings. But it's over the generations, the electric grid has just been built piece by piece until finally today we have this huge interconnected mesh of 3,000 different companies that are generating, transmitting, and distributing our electric power. So it's a huge, complicated machine, and the regulatory system behind it is mind-numbingly complex. But the bottom line is, you know, and I've been studying this for over a decade, presently the federal government has no authority to tell the electric grid to harden itself against any threats. And the 50 different state public utility commissions have jurisdiction over a piece of it, which is the distribution piece. That's, you know, the wires that come from the pole on the street, mm-hmm. you know, to our houses or mm-hmm. businesses. the federal government has indirect authority over the transmission part, and that's those, you know, big, huge electrical lines that you see as you're driving down the highway that transmit energy for huge, huge distances. And then there's mixed jurisdiction over the generation piece. So you've got this mind-numbingly complex regulatory regime, and nobody has the authority to tell the electric grid to protect itself. Now, let's look at other examples of kind of regulatory schemes. So let's say you want
Let's go to break and then come back on this. Sure. This is a fascinating conversation. I'm talking with Michael Mabee regarding grid security now and our electric grid. And before we go to break, Castlegate Knife and Tool, great sponsor of the show. And can't believe that Christmas is actually right around the corner. And they're bringing in a lot of inventory for that. But whether or not you're a chef or a sportsman, a collector, if you need to get a wedding gift or a birthday gift, Castlegate Knife and Tool has a wide range of obviously some of the best blades from throughout the world, but also they have a lovely collection of watches, and they're always growing. So Hal and Linnea Van Herkey, they are the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. Check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. We'll come back and talking with Michael Mabee about the security of our grid. Stay tuned.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who support us. Having just a fascinating conversation with Michael Mabee regarding our electric grid. And I think that we take turning on the switch for granted, Michael, and don't even realize how much we depend on our electric grid. And you've said that there just hasn't been a regulatory agency. And I don't really like government regulation, but it does seems to me like from a free market standpoint that a utility would want to make sure that they have the grid hardened. Because if things go down like what happened in Texas, I mean, the costs are significant. But that doesn't seem to be happening, Michael.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, in Texas, for example, the electric utility industry was successful in lobbying for legislation so that they can recover the costs for the outage that their negligence caused. So that's how powerful, the electric utility lobbyists are right now.
Wow.
But in terms of, you know, actually protecting the grid, there isn't any government agency that has the authority to tell the grid to protect itself. But we're not just talking about, kind of a free market thing. We're talking about the basics of the Constitution. So the federal government is obligated by the Constitution to provide for the common defense. That is one of its main jobs that it just
right.
isn't subject to debate, the government is meddling in things it shouldn't be meddling or whatever. They are supposed to provide for the common defense. If the electric grid goes down as a result of a cyber attack, a coordinated physical attack, or solar weather, or, any other reason, millions of Americans are going to die. And, we cannot sustain our human population. We're literally on life support. The electric grid is what makes it possible to support a human population of 330 million in the United States. Everything that we depend on, to survive, food, water, medical, everything, depends on the electric grid. So, you know, the federal government needs to step up and they need to protect this most critical of our critical infrastructures. We've identified 16 critical infrastructures in the United States. Every one of them depends on the electric grid, including our military bases, our nuclear power plants. Everything depends on the electric grid. And right now, the regulatory system is just allowing all of these threats to go unaddressed. And I'll give you a real good example. In 1980, the Government Accountability Office published a report about the threats of a coordinated physical attack to the electric grid. So this is 40 years ago that, the federal government recognized that a coordinated physical attack against the electric grid could be catastrophic and cause a widespread long-term outage. And yet here we are in 2021, and relatively nothing has been done. There is no requirement that the electric grid be protected from physical attacks. The transmission part of the electric grid has one really weak physical security requirement that doesn't apply to very many of the facilities at all. So, you know, this is a clear failure of our federal government to do their constitutionally mandated duty of protecting the American people. And because of the power and the money that the electric utility lobby has been throwing in, you know, for the last several decades, into thwarting further regulation, the only way we fix this is people need to be involved. People need to contact their legislators, their senators and their representatives. And up on my website in that article you talked about, I name all of the names from 2020.
I see that there.
Who took money from the electric utility industry. It sure is. And you know, the other thing is it's pretty bipartisan. They're all taking the money. The Democrats are taking the money. The Republicans are taking the money. Some names that would really, really surprise you. I mean, two of the biggest recipients are Bernie Sanders, who's about as far left as you get, and Mitch McConnell, who's about as far right as you get. So
I would recommend that you go to Michael's website and check that out, michaelmaybe.info. You will be fascinated. Michael, there was one other question, and we're getting close to the end of the show, and that is these transformers. And we have made labor so expensive in America with all of the taxes and the fees on labor. And so what has happened is a lot of our manufacturing has gone offshore. And these big electric transformers, we have imported a bunch of those from China. And I need to make a correction. In our promo, I said that 20% of the energy in New York has Chinese transformers. And when you and I talked after that, I'd already recorded it. You said that was 10%, but it's 20% for Las Vegas. And we realize that there might be some nefarious stuff going on with those transformers. We've got about 3 minutes left. I'd love to have you address that.
Sure. So the bottom line is we are importing equipment from the People's Republic of China and installing it onto the electric grid that the Chinese are already hacking. What could possibly go wrong? That's exactly what is happening. We have, over the last decade, imported 366 large Chinese transformers and installed them into the electric grid that the Chinese are already hacking. A matter of fact, the federal government seized one of these in 2019 and brought it to a national laboratory because of security concerns. And yet today there is no requirement that anybody check any of this Chinese equipment or equipment from any other foreign manufacturer for that matter. Just so happens that the Chinese equipment is a pretty prominent piece of that. So, you know, we continue to import this. And like I said, we have 3,000 different companies in the electric grid. If they want to buy their, you know, transformers or their SCADA systems or other electronics from China and install it onto the grid, there's nothing saying that they can't do that or that they have to check any of this equipment. So that's another, if you go up to my website, I filed a complaint with the federal government about this, you know, basically telling the federal government they need to do their job. And, you know, we need to have some standards that these, you know, this equipment be checked when it's installed on our critical infrastructure. And this is another thing where people can get involved. If you go up on my website, there's a Take Action tab. And if you click on that, anybody listening, if you're concerned about the safety of your family, we've got a Take Action tab that tells you exactly what you can do. And really, we need to hold our elected officials accountable to protect our families and protect our countries, which is their constitutionally mandated duty. So if they're taking money from the industry and not passing legislation to protect the grid, they're not doing their job. And we need to reflect that the next time we go into the voting booth. So I highly encourage everybody to contact your senator's office, contact your representative's office, ask them, why are we importing equipment from the People's Republic of China and installing it on the electric grid that the Chinese are already hacking?
Yes, most definitely. And again, it's a pretty fascinating group of people that have been taking money from the industry on this. And again, Michael, your website is?
It's michaelmabee.info. So maybe is spelled M-A-B-E-E, michaelmabee.info.
Michael Mabee, thank you so much for joining us, and let's stay in touch. This is a very important issue.
Thank you so much for having me.
And our quote for today is Thomas Edison. He said, "Be courageous. Whatever setbacks America has encountered, it has always emerged as a stronger and more prosperous nation. Be brave as your fathers before you. Have faith and go forward." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you and God bless America.